Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick. Today is October 18th, 2015, and this is episode 94. Episode 94, Leave Luck to Hell, Nintendo's Secret Horror Games. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're continuing our Ninty 90s and taking a look at a genre that many people don't really connect to Nintendo. Horror!
So buckle in and
get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits for your perusal. Slaggy, why don't you get us started?
Yes, we have some exciting news about Overwatch. The beta is beginning on October 27th.
Yes, queen!
Yes, you know, we've been covering the development of this since its announcement, and we're all very excited here. By we all, I mean both of us.
Right. We also have word here that the upcoming Dengeki Bunko Fighting Climax Ignition will include a new playable character in the form of Kuroko Shirai-san, who is from a certain magical index and a certain scientific railgun. So, you know, that's super exciting. Index and Railgun were both super popular anime, manga, and light novels. I know there were definitely big fan bases in the West for both of these series, so that's definitely something to look forward to when this game hits at the end of this year.
We got word from the Dengeki Bunko Fall Festival 2015 that the fighting climax, like Dengeki Bunko, Fall Festival 2015, that Bandai Namco has revealed Sword Art Online Holo Realization for PS4 and Vita. It is the fourth installment in the Sword Art Online console series of games.
And we actually spoke a few weeks ago about this game being announced, but we just heard finally about sort of the name of the game, and we finally got our first hints at what the theme of the game is going to be, which is a revival of the Aincrad setting.
Oh, thank God, because I was not a huge fan of what was the other one?
There have been several other ones.
The fairy one. I was not a fan of that.
All right. Moving forward, we have
word. Not a fan of fairy. Surprising, right?
We have word here of a new Brazilian Street Fighter V character.
Yeah.
This one was announced formally earlier this month alongside Zangief.
Yes, daddy.
Lara is Brazilian with electric powers. She fights using a Brazilian jiu-jitsu style, and people are thinking she's probably going to be like the new Blanca-type character.
More like Pika jiu-jitsu.
All right. The announcement of Zangief, as I mentioned, also occurred, so Street Fighter V is really starting to have its cast filled out.
Yeah, looks good.
Really does. Zangief looks as good as ever, and I'm really looking forward to playing as him.
Some Final Fantasy baddies are going to be part of Lord of Vermillion Arena, which is going to be, you know, kind of a MOBA-like featuring some Square Enix characters. The five monsters that have been announced are Bomb, Tomberry, Cactar, Marbolo, and Omega Weapon.
Excellent. That's exciting. We also, of course, have word here that Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator is getting another new character, this one in the form of Dizzy, who is a fan favorite in the series.
Yes.
I don't really like playing as Dizzy a whole lot, but watching Dizzy players is super fun because she's a very flashy technical character. So I would definitely look forward to this. That'll be hitting Japan in the arcades pretty quickly, and the character will be available in the retail console release on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3 in Japan in spring 2016. I'm sure American dates will follow.
So we have some bad news because Allison Road, which is the PT-inspired horror game, has canceled their Kickstarter.
But we also have some good news, because the Kickstarter was canceled because the creators of Allison Road are going to be working with Worms creators, Team 17, in order to publish this game as a full retail release.
Wonderful.
Absolutely wonderful. We also have word, last but certainly not ever least, that One Piece Burning Blood will be coming westward on the PS4, PS Vita, and Xbox One in 2016.
Cool.
Yeah. As ever and always, we do have some release buoy news here as well.
Quite a few this time.
Mobile Suit Gundam Extreme Versus Force will be releasing in Japan on December 23rd for PlayStation Vita. Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival will be releasing in Japan on November 20th. November 21st. And in Europe on November 20th. Along with that, there's also going to be a new set of Animal Crossing Amiibo. So please look forward to that.
Interesting.
Mario Tennis Ultra Smash will be releasing in North America on November 20th. Monster Strike will be hitting 3DS in Japan on December 17th. Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth will be releasing on February 2nd in North America. Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth 5 will be releasing on October 30th on Steam in North America. Steins Gate Zero will be releasing in Japan on December 10th for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation Vita. And last but, well, sort of least, Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball 3 will be releasing on PS4 and PS Vita on February 25th in Japan.
That's a lot of release dates.
Sure is. Unless you have anything else, I think it's time for some news.
It's time for some news.
News.
Oh my god, news.
Well, the big news is that Atlus recently had a Twitter campaign with a goal of 15,000 tweets and retweets, after which they would reveal a new announcement. The goal was promptly released, and the game that was announced is Shin Megami Tensei 4 Final. While this sounds like an enhanced release of Shin Megami Tensei 4, it is actually a completely new game that takes place after Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Wow.
Kind of, it's basically Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Fortuitous.
The theme of the new game is Deicide, and the game will be releasing in February 2016 in Japan.
Oh, I thought it was Decide. I was like, ooh, that sounds kind of vague.
Ah, well, all of the games are about deciding, so...
Oh, well, yeah.
The idea of killing gods, now that's a next tier for them. Although, again, you know, they've done it, so...
Yeah.
Interesting, either way.
We have an interesting form of DLC coming to the Japanese version of Super Mario Maker, and this is in the form of a costume mushroom for Mario that will turn him into Arino-san from Game Center CX.
Gotcha!
So, that'll be a thing.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I'm a big fan of Game Center CX, also known as Retro Game Master, and Arino-san is a heck of a personality. He loves video games.
I love Arino-san.
Yeah, right? So, I'm super stoked for this. I hope this comes over to North America. Like, even if a lot of people won't know who he is, who cares?
Right.
We also have word that the well-loved visual novel series Muv Love will be coming to North America via a Kickstarter project.
Would you say it's the much-loved Muv Love?
I wouldn't. This is going to be releasing on Android devices and PlayStation Vita for sure. Depending on stretch goals, it may also come to home consoles and PCs. So, fingers crossed, I hope that this game makes enough money to come to everything, because it... You know, I've heard so much about it for years and years, and I would love to finally get a chance to play it myself.
Sony Computer Entertainment Japan Asia has announced that their annual PlayStation Awards ceremony is going to be held this year on December 3rd. This is the awards ceremony that started way back in 1994 with the, release of the PlayStation 1, and it commemorates the best-selling PlayStation titles.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word here that Marvel Puzzle Quest is coming to consoles, and rather than being a free-to-play game with lots of microtransactions, this is going to be a one-time purchase of $14.99 that is based, from a gameplay perspective, more along the lines of the older original Puzzle Quest games.
Yes.
So this is very exciting, super stoked to hear it, and really looking forward to it.
Marvelous is going to be coming out with a new beat-em-up called Uppers. It is a beat-em-up set on an island where fighting is the best form of entertainment.
Excellent. That's kind of a silly name, but... the game looks good, so I look forward to it. Unfortunately, we do have a little bit of downer news, so let's move over to that. You may recall earlier this year and late last year, we were talking about a Bandai Namco title for the PC called Rise of the Incarnates. This is a free-to-play 2v2 fighting game based around the Gundam Versus engine. Unfortunately, This game will be shutting down on December 15th. They're already no longer selling any of the microtransactions, and after December 15th, this game goes away forever. So if you were interested in playing this, all of the characters in the game are available as free downloads. All of the in-game items have a reduced price, and some of them are free, too. Definitely, if you want to get some playtime in before December 15th, I would recommend it. It's, it's not necessarily a huge success, but it's definitely an interesting footnote in Bandai Namco trying to get this kind of style of game off the ground.
Yeah.
Not sure why they didn't just bring one of the Gundam game versus games over, but it is what it is.
Yep.
Sorry for anyone who was playing it and enjoying it. I've played it before. I thought, like I said, it was kind of cute. Not amazing, but it is what it is.
It was a thing.
Either way, it's always a sad thing when these games shut down and go away forever, so we're pouring out a 40 for you.
Indeed.
We also have some controversial news here, so let's kick on over.
Oh my god, can I take this one?
Yes, you can.
So, as you know, Konami is no longer making console games, basically, which leaves wide open opportunities for their pachinko business. In fact, they have recently filed a trademark for Big Boss.
What?
So, Metal Gear Solid, the Phantom Pachinko, I guess.
Damn, more like the Pachinko Pain, because that's what I'm feeling right now.
Ooh.
This is obviously controversial because it's been a huge deal. In fact, when the Castlevania Pachinko was announced, a lot of people were making jokes like, oh man, I bet a Guilty Gear Pachinko game is coming, lol. And then the Silent Hill Pachinko game got announced. And now the Metal Gear Solid Pachinko game is a real-for-real thing. Definitely not super happy about this. I've just baffling my mind. It's mind-boggling to me that Konami continues to treat their properties this way. And
yeah.
I not a big fan. I know I've previously been like, worse things have happened. But to see it happen to Metal Gear, that's the series that's still making you money and you're treating it this way?
Mm-hmm.
I officially don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Konami. There were the reports that they're leaving AAA game development, and then they're like, no, that's not true. Who knows what they're doing?
Yeah. All right, well, we also have word here that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5, which finally released a few weeks ago, is literally a completely broken game, on top of being quote-unquote heartbreakingly bad. Apparently,
wow.
From a design level, the game is apparently quite poorly designed, just not a whole lot of fun, feels like it was rushed out the door, possibly because, there was a looming contract issue coming up. But in addition to that, the game is literally broken, full of, falling outside of the world, doing, kick flips and literally just flying into outer space after doing a jump.
Sounds awesome, but not $60 awesome.
Ah, right. It sounds like Kusoge level.
Right?
It's apparently just a complete broken mess. The game had already a very lengthy day one patch that was huge, and even still, it is just absolutely broken. It is a complete mess from head to toe. So that sucks. People are super upset about it, and,
yeah,
who
this
can
was
blame
supposed
them?
To be like the big return to form for that franchise. And, there was that one with the motion detected skateboard.
Tony Hawk the Ride, woo!
And that was a mess, so maybe time for Tony to skate off into the sunset.
Yeah, I think,
in the video game realm.
Well, Tony Hawk's contract with Activision ends on December 31st. A lot of people feel like this game was rushed out the door just to be on shelves for the next few months and make a little coin before they lose the license. So, at this point, based on the way that they treated music game genre, I wouldn't be beyond putting Activision in the role of, they are literally, strip mining Tony Hawk's name and value in the game space before that contract is up so that no one else can do anything with it. I truly believe that, and it's gross and nasty and controversial as shit, but that's really what I think
is
happening.
Well, now
it's
up to some up-and-coming indie studio to come and make a homage to the old Tony Hawk's Pro Skater games and put it on Kickstarter, because that seems to be the only way to get things done these days.
Right. All right, well, with all that having been said, it's time to talk a little bit about some Nintendo horror games. We're going to specifically do things a little weird here because we're just going to talk about horror games that Nintendo had a hand in. On our social media feed, a few people had called out the game correctly, the big games we're going to talk about here. But there was one that I feel didn't really get its fair due, so I'm excited to talk about that. Saigi, do you want to talk about what these three prime games are?
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about the involvement of Nintendo in the Fatal Frame franchise, including the newest release, Maiden of Blackwater, Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem, which is probably the one that most of you were thinking of, and Spike's beloved Geist.
Geist! Woo! And I know it's a little bit more of like a first-person shooter, first-person adventure, but screw you, man. You literally play a ghost possessing people. It's horror. And, you know, we may also talk a little bit about Demon World, because 8-bit horror, bro. So the first game we're going to talk about here is a little bit of a strange one, because Nintendo doesn't really come into the story until the fourth game in the series. This is, of course, the Fatal Frame series. Fatal Frame is really cool. The game typically uses a third-person perspective for, like, the adventuring and exploration areas. And then you switch to a first-person perspective when you use the main weapon of the game, which is the Camera Obscura.
Oh my god, I love that band.
All right. While Tecmo Koei is the actual owner of the Fatal Frame IP, Nintendo specifically owns the rights to Fatal Frame 4, Spirit Camera, Fatal Frame 2 Wii Edition, and Fatal Frame 5, as well as all rights to future installments of the series. So it's kind of a really weird situation here. Nintendo basically, like, bought this IP with Tecmo Koei for future use. But the original games were PlayStation 2 and Xbox games. So a little weird. But with Fatal Frame 4 Mask of the Lunar Eclipse, this was released back in 2008 in Japan. It was announced for Western release, but was unfortunately never actually released due to some really bad glitches in the Japanese release of the game that they were unable to get staff from Tecmo Koei and, I'm sorry, Koei Tecmo and Grasshopper Manufacture, basically, and Grasshopper Manufacture, who did a lot of the programming on the game. They were unable to free up staff to fix this game for other regions, so they were forced, unfortunately, to cancel it. There are fan-made patches that you can run with a legitimate disc, even in an unhard modded Wii U or Wii system. So it is a game that you can play, and it is a game I think you should play. So the way that the Fatal Frame series games work, basically you play typically a Japanese schoolgirl, although there is a little variation on the schoolgirl aspect. And basically you're investigating paranormal events for random reasons, and you begin to get haunted. And the only way that you can attack ghosts is to pull out your Camera Obscura, which is a camera, and take photos of them before the ghosts can reach you. So think of it as sort of like spooky Pokemon Snap, and you're basically there.
Or Luigi's Camera Mansion.
Luigi's Camera. Yeah, that would be fair. You know, the games themselves are all really good. Very much born in the model of that, like, late 90s, early 2000s survival horror mold. But, you know, the camera aspect, and, you know, you get scores and points based on, like, how good your photos are. Again, similar to Pokemon Snap, or the kind of thing you might see in, like, Primal Image. It actually makes the game a lot more fun because it isn't just like, oh man, I totally capped that zombie in the head. It's like, no, I got a really stylish photo of that haunting bitch. It brings some sass to it that I find really fun. You know, I love the fact that your combat mechanism there is a very defensive mechanism. It's not like I'm gonna go hunt out these ghosts. It's more like, oh shit, a ghost is coming. Can I get a picture of it before it hits me? It creates very tense sequences. I love the atmosphere, very like Japanese horror movie feel to the proceedings. And this one in particular, Mask of the Lunar Eclipse, has a lot of really good scares. And, you know, the story, it's fairly creepy. I'm really into it. So I definitely think that this is one that you should check out. It's pretty easy to get running on even a Western Wii at this point in English. So I don't think there's a whole lot of reason not to play this game if you want to.
Nice.
The next one I want to talk about is Spirit Camera, The Cursed Memoir. This is a 3DS game that is based around AR functionality. Now, it's a little bit weird. You know, the game comes with an AR notebook called The Diary of Faces that basically, you know, the game uses AR to make, like, hands and ghosts come out of the book at you. It's really cool in that, like, it's an AR game that is also trying to tell you a story. But unfortunately, you know, you're playing the game through this book, and depending on how you feel about AR games, it's either kind of fun or too gimmicky and either way, it ends really quickly. It's not a very long experience. I paid like $30 for this.
Oh man!
And it's hard for me not to be a little salty if I'm being real about it. Slaggy, have you played Spirit Camera?
I haven't. I remember the idea being cute, but and I think we had talked about this one as it came out or shortly after it came out.
Yeah, well, this came out in North America April 13th, 2012. So if we weren't buoying yet, we were just about to.
Yeah.
So it's definitely within the span of buoyness.
It was, yeah. Actually, that would have been, right at the start of Buoy.
Excellent. Well, the next game I want to talk about here, and this is where things start getting a little more interesting, is that the Wii remake of Fatal Frame 2 Crimson Butterfly. This released in Japan on June 28th, 2012, and in Europe on June 29th, 2012. So this game is easily available in English, fully translated, and it's just a remake of what I feel is an absolute classic survival horror game. I think that Fatal Frame 2 is the game in the series that, like, if you were like, if I were to play one Fatal Frame game, which one should it be? Fatal Frame 2 is the one I would have picked anyway, so that there is a cool Wii edition available with improved graphics from the original and like new gameplay systems that make it more, you know, a little more interesting. It's just overall a huge improvement for me and definitely something that's very exciting. I would recommend it as an absolute must play if you're interested in this series.
Yeah, it sounds really like the additions they made for the Wii sound like it really enhanced it.
Excellent, excellent. And the last game I want to talk about is the one that is actually coming out in about a week. This is Fatal Frame Maiden of Black Water. And this one is the one, of course, we talked about it quite a bit when it released in Japan. The Raven-Haired Shrine Maiden released in Japan last September. It's releasing in North America, the EU territories, and Australia this month. This, of course, is the first game in the series on the Wii U. As a result, of course, the graphics are the best they have ever been. It has multiple endings. Pretty much everything you could want from a game like this is definitely, you know, going to be a part of it. There's we talked about this, a new scenario involving one of the characters from Dead or Alive, Ayane. Yeah. So definitely some really cool stuff here. I haven't played it yet. That's why I'm a little bit like, I don't have a whole lot to say. I'm super excited about it. They're going to be releasing it in North America with a free to start downloadable, like, two chapters where you can really, you know, decide if those two chapters are working for you before you really pay to buy it. It will be releasing in North America as a digital only release. It does have physical copies in every other part of the world.
Nice.
Do you have anything else to say about Fatal Frame, Slaggy?
No, I just feel like with Made in a Blackwater that a lot of people are looking forward to it. You know, my only experience with Fatal Frame was the first one on PS2. So, but I should check out Made in a Blackwater, definitely.
Well, why don't we talk about that? What did you think of Fatal Frame 2? Or Fatal Frame on PlayStation 2?
I liked it. It was, you know, really atmospheric. I think we had talked about it a couple years ago.
I think we did, and that's kind of why we don't necessarily have a whole lot to say here, but I just want to make sure that this is one of those things where I wanted to talk about it, and so we are.
Yeah, so, you know, I hope that Maiden of Blackwater does well so that Nintendo will keep, you know, pursuing this franchise.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, then let's talk about Eternal Darkness. Have we talked about this game in depth here on the show?
I mean, we've definitely mentioned Silicon Knights, you know, and all of that.
Yeah. Well, so the thing about Eternal Darkness is that it was published by Nintendo, developed by Silicon Knights, still owned by Nintendo as an IP, and they still keep up the copy protection. So we may still see this come up someday. It is a third-person survival horror game. Takes place all around the world, actually. And it's a really cool, like, take on sort of like Cthulhu-type eldritch mythology. The game is just very dark, very atmospheric, probably most well known in the modern age for its crazy, like, sanity effects. You know, and this is actually patented by Nintendo. The game has a sanity meter, and depending on, like, how traumatic the experiences you lead your player character through, the sanity meter will actually drop, and, like, as it drops, the environment will change around you and random events will occur, and, like, some of the effects are really, like, upsetting. Like, one of them starts skewing the camera angles so slightly so as to, like, start creating, like, discomfort on your end. you know, the game will start simulating, like, errors on your TV or your GameCube, including, like, straight up a blue screen of death will pop up. It's just, like, really, really cool stuff. In fact, you know, I know people who have gotten some of the sanity effects of, like, blue screen of death, who have, like, turned off their console in rage only to realize that the game basically punked them.
Oh, wow.
Right? So it's just really cool stuff. Very similar to the kind of thing that, like, Hideo Kojima might have done. And it's not hard for me to think that, like, you know, Silicon Knights ended up working with Hideo Kojima. It's not hard for me to imagine that, like, some of those discussions may have started around these things.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, doing stuff like the blue screen of death, that's very similar to that Metal Gear Solid fight against Psycho Mantis, where he turns off your TV, by which, you know, he just makes the screen go blank, and in the corner it says, like, Hideo, like video, but with an H.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right? So it's just really cool stuff, breaking this fourth wall, you know, and some of the other sanity effect stuff are just, like, little touches where, like, you'll start hearing the sounds of monsters following you that aren't following you. Walls will randomly just start bleeding around you. The volume of the game will start, like, wildly changing, getting, like, super quiet.
Mommy,
and super
make
loud.
It softer.
Yeah, yeah. It's just really, like, weird, cool stuff that really creates, like, an atmosphere of real dread.
Which is why I have not yet played it.
Right. Silicon Knights themselves refer to it more as a psychological thriller than, like, straight up, like, a horror game. And, you know, I think that's a fair call. Because, again, you know, like I said, the atmosphere and tone created by some of these effects is actually upsetting. And I'm not that surprised that this is a game that is ultimately owned and, you know, was brought into creation by, you know, in large part, Nintendo. Nintendo is always very interested in doing new things, in, you know, sort of expanding the scope and possibility of what games can do. And Eternal Darkness, to me, is, like, the quintessential, this is what happens when Nintendo gets into a genre like survival horror.
Yeah.
But the other game where I would say that is true is the game Geist. This one, Nintendo worked with N-Space. You know, I talk about N-Space a lot. It feels like they've done, you know, a fair number of projects in the day, primarily on, like, DS and GBA games back in the day. But this game that they did with Nintendo, Geist, it's sort of like a first-person shooter game, except there's also, like, a mode where that's a little bit more like third-person, where you basically are a spirit that inhabits animals and other people in the game. And, you know, I've talked about this game a little bit here on the show. You could do stuff like, oh, I'm going to, you know, go into this mouse so that I can get through holes in the wall. It's just, it's a really cool, very experimental game. It's just a lot of fun to me. I really enjoy playing the game. There are, like, some demons and stuff going on. It's just, I really, really enjoyed it. Psyche, have you ever played this game?
I haven't. It's really interesting just thinking that, you know, N-Space typically has done, you know, they worked on a lot of the earlier Call of Duties, even, you know, some of the more recent ones like Black Ops. They also did a lot of Disney interactive stuff and, like, the Mary-Kate and Ashley games and things like The Force Unleashed. So just, like, a really weird, you know, kind of library, but this is just another little odd gem, you know, in their library.
Excellent, excellent. You know, there was also a multiplayer mode in this game, and that's funny because basically you're playing with up to 4 humans, because, you know, GameCube, and up to 7 computer-controlled bots. And there was, you know, just a deathmatch, which is, you know, a deathmatch, but whatever. But there was also, like, Capture the Host, where everyone is like, trying to compete for taking over a host. And it just was really, really, it's a cool concept, because all of these game modes really take advantage of how weird and strange the concept of the game was. That specifically of, you know, taking things over, utilizing their unique strengths to get around the environment and attack each other. It's just a very Nintendo-like take on the third-person or first-person shooter. And it's kind of interesting to me because I know a lot of people who are like, you know, oh, Nintendo has never done a shooter before Splatoon. But it's like, no, they actually made a fairly competent one with N-Space back in 2005, which is when this game released, was in the second half of 2005 all around the world. Except Japan, apparently. I didn't realize this game never released in Japan. So, released for GameCube, definitely one that I would recommend looking into if you're interested in. It's interesting because it was the second GameCube game published by Nintendo to receive an M rating. And the first was Eternal Darkness Sanity's Requiem. Slaggy, unless you have anything else to say, though, we can move on. I know the thing is we've talked about most of these games before, so...
Yeah, let's move on.
All right, well, then the last game I want to talk about here is going back to some 8-bit horror. This is Devil World. You may have played this game before. You play a cute little green dragon named Tamagon, and he decides that he's going to attack the Devil's World. So it's kind of similar. It's almost like Pac-Man meets Zelda. You're trying to collect crosses and kill demons. And, you know, it's a cute game. It's a little bit basic in the modern age. But back in the day, it was like cute evil. It was never released in North America. But, let me rephrase that. It was never released... It was never released in North America, but it was released in the EU territories on the NES, on the Virtual Console, for Wii, 3DS, and Wii U. Japan obviously released in all of those territories and all those formats. It's a weird little game, the kind of game that you play for 5 minutes and now you're kind of done with it. But I would definitely recommend that you check it out just because it's such a weird little game. It's not necessarily a lot of fun to play, but like you literally are collecting Bibles and crosses.
And, well, now we know why.
In order to fight a devil.
Now we know why it wasn't available in America.
Yeah, right. A game where you're playing a little dragon who collects crosses and Bibles to fight the devil. Actually, you'd think that Americans would be super into it.
I'm surprised that Wisdom Tree didn't try to bring it over. Just they could have changed Tamagon into like a little Bible school kid.
So that's about all we have to say about these four games, but. I know for a fact, Slaggy, that we did have some question of the week responses on this topic. As is often the case, why don't we read those now?
All right. This week on Game Buoy, we're talking about horror games on Nintendo consoles. Which ones get you in the Halloween spirit?
Ooh.
Coffee and Quests said, replayed Lone Survivor on Wii U last week. Still terrifying. Fiddle Frame 5 soon.
So... Lone Survivor is a fantastic, like, 2D graphic, like, pixely survival horror game. It's super cool, available on the PS4, Wii U, PS3, and Vita, and on PC. Definitely recommend you check it out if you're interested in that sort of thing. Maybe check YouTube for a trailer. Like, it's cool stuff, though. I don't think we've ever talked about it here on the show. You have super good taste.
Your Enzyme had said, and this actually was in regards to, unfortunately, you know, we had to delay this episode, but thank you for your patience. Your Enzyme had said, hope everything's all right. That gives me some time to think of Nintendo horror games other than Resident Evil and Eternal Darkness. Then a few days
And, you know, that's another thing we didn't really talk about was Nintendo did invest heavily in the Resident Evil brand back in the N64 and GameCube days.
Yep.
You know, Resident Evil 4 was obviously initially meant to be a GameCube exclusive. Resident Evil 0 also meant to be a GameCube exclusive. They got Resident Evil 2 onto an N64 cartridge somehow. they did GameCube ports of Resident Evil 2 and 3. Obviously, Resident Evil Remake was huge on the GameCube and exclusive for many years. So,
yeah,
Nintendo, super valid choice, Resident Evil, man. Nintendo put a lot into that system. And some of these games have, you know, only recently started getting ported to non-Nintendo consoles.
Yep. Your Enzyme, a couple days later, said, yeah, I got nothing. Eternal Darkness and the RE games are all I can remember. Can't wait to be enlightened, though. Gamer Fox said, Eternal Darkness on the GameCube for sure. Dan Diaz said, Friday the 13th on NES, LOL. Seriously, though, so looking forward to the new Fatal Frame. Over on Facebook, we also asked the Facebook bone-chilling bonus. Which horror game or franchise is 6 feet under that you'd like to see return from the dead as a Nintendo exclusive? Daniel T. over on Facebook said, the only horror game I need to play on any console is Super Mario 64. I don't think any game will ever recreate the terror I felt the first time that piano tried to eat my face. The Boo carousel was also incredibly unsettling. Alternately, all of the Trauma Center games create a very chilling atmosphere. Granted, the games are full of of optimism and perseverance, but the games have some incredibly grotesque moments, particularly Trauma Team.
Absolutely.
There's something about uncontrollably vomiting blood while tiny organisms tear up your body from the inside that puts me on edge.
Yeah, that's a really good call.
And if you really want a game more traditionally classified under horror, then 999... I just wanted to hear Slaxic's German accent as he read the game title. Well,
oh,
there you go.
Girl.
The story of the game is engrossing, and the quasi-saw premise is really effective at getting the heart rate up. I know what else is effective at getting the heart rate up.
Yeah, no, I'm a super, super, super huge fan of that game. I'm totally with you. Well done.
As for franchises that should return, I would love to see another Sweet Home game or even a remake. The story of that game was incredibly chilling, and I find the horror RPG genre very fun. Games such as Kodelka, Shadow Hearts, and Parasite Eve. On that note, a new Parasite Eve on NX, please, have proven that the ideas work together in a variety of ways. While Sweet Home itself had some very forward-thinking ideas about character abilities, character deaths, and puzzle solving.
Yeah, absolutely. We're big fans of that game here in the studio. We've talked about it here on the show.
We have, yes.
I am totally with you on that call.
And that's it for our responses to the question of the week. We will come back to social links in a few minutes with some general feedback. But first, what do we got in store?
Well, you know, that's actually the end of our discussion. So we will wrap this up. And, you know, thank you for participating as ever and always. Our conversation is stronger for it being a conversation with all of you out there in Internet Radio Land. We live for your feedback and interactions with us on these things. Let's move on to some rumors.
Rumor has it that Adele's new record, 25, is going to be dropping before the end of the year.
So, we have word here from the Wall Street Journal, of all places, stating that as of last week, Nintendo has begun distributing software development kits for the NX. Obviously, with Wall Street Journal reporting on it, it is very likely that this is a real thing that has already happened. So it's very likely that we are going to start getting speculation and rumors of the NX that are based on actual Nintendo documentation. Obviously, if you're out there, you're interested in the NX, it seems pretty likely if you're listening to this show. You know, keep your eyes open. Words are about to start leaking.
Yep, and there's already the hybrid buzzing.
We also have word here that the Wii U eShop, which, you know, you can actually root around in pretty in-depth if you have a hacked Wii or Wii U. People have found assets for an HD Twilight Princess release on the Wii U. You know, a lot of people are speculating that we may get a, you know, surprise announcement sometime in the next week or two for a sudden Beyoncé-style release this holiday. You know, obviously Nintendo had previously hoped to get the new Zelda game out on Wii U for this holiday season. I would not be surprised if that was being pushed back to being a simultaneous release between the Wii U and the NX consoles, and that space might be filled with a Twilight Princess HD port. Though that is speculation on my part, the fact remains fact. There are assets for such a thing on Nintendo's servers.
Interesting.
Well, that's about it for the rumors this week, but we do have a smash. Now, this is a piece that ran several weeks ago now on Eurogamer.net. This is written by Rich Stanton, and the piece is on Year Walk and the Future Nintendo Predicted. And it's basically an essay talking about sort of looking back at Nintendo's original stated goals and ideas for the Wii U and sort of puzzling out because, you know, a lot of us feel really strongly that Nintendo, even when they make mistakes, they're always beautiful mistakes that are done in the interest of moving things forward. It's never like a mistake that's like, you know, we're trying to make profit right now. It's never a mistake that's made spitefully. It's always in the interest of moving forward, in the interest of doing something. And a lot of people really struggled with what the Wii U is and was supposed to be. And this essay, if for me at least, in a lot of ways, it was like, you know, This is it. This is what Nintendo was trying to make happen. Whether they failed or not is, you know, certainly up to your discretion. Many of us would probably agree that they did, in fact, fail. Either way, this is an essay I highly recommend you read, and we will link it to you over on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
All right, well, why don't we talk a little bit about what we're playing? Slaggy, why don't you kick us off? What have you been playing this week?
I've been playing a lot.
That's a nice change.
Yes, it is. So I think first what I'll talk about is that earlier this month, Midboss, the folks behind the GamerX convention, finally released their premiere game, Read Only Memories. And I'm about maybe an hour or so into it, a couple chapters in. And I'm really having a great time. For those who have not heard me talk about it on air before, it is it's an adventure game, you know, in the style of Police Knots or Snatcher, you know, very much influenced by the kind of cyberpunk early work of Hideo Kojima-san. You know, even though it does wear its influences on its sleeve, you know, the writing is really clever, and, you know, it presents its own new story and stuff, and it explores, you know, it was notable, of course, for having, you know, queer characters, but the queer characters aren't just like, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. You know, it's definitely more about identity and, you know, how to, you know, kind of how your identity is like perceived and stuff. So, you know, really excited to dive into it more. The writing is super clever, and I'm just really proud to see, you know, that project, you know, doing so well. It's being pretty well received, so I'm really happy for them.
Excellent. What else have you been playing?
I've been putting a lot more time into Mario Maker, inspired by one of our listeners, Little Daddy's Pizza. I've been trying to make some Super Mario World levels, and so I made the Cacao Land. And now I'm working on Java Land. I decided to name it after, like, coffees and stuff. And so I've been having a lot of fun with that. And it also, in turn, inspired me to see if my skills that I feel like I've picked up from, you know, having to beat my own Mario Maker levels and beat other people's levels who are better at the game than I am. Like, you know, like playing your levels, for example, I feel like that's how you know, do timings on those jumps or whatever. So, you know, I was like, I wonder if it will transfer over to the old school games. And what was really surprising is that I had forgotten, since it had been a while since I'd played, you know, Super Mario Brothers 1 and Super Mario Brothers 3. You know, Mario World I'd played a little more recently, but it had really surprised me how the physics were not as I remembered them. You know, they did make some pretty big tweaks in Super Mario Maker, particularly like in Super Mario 1, that I almost feel bad saying it, but it almost makes going back and playing Mario 1 a little bit lackluster in some ways, because I'm like, oh, I want to be timing my jumps this way, and it's like, it's kind of feels a little clunky, and even Mario 3 a little bit too. The one that does, where it starts to feel like the same sort of parody, I guess you could say, with Mario Maker is
parody, not parody.
Parody, that's what I said.
Okay.
Parody.
Yeah, I thought you were, I was like, what?
No, but where, like I'm saying, it starts to feel like, okay, yeah, that's how the game actually controls.
Excellent.
And I've also been putting some more time into Rock Band 4 with you.
Excellent.
I guess we hadn't even talked about that yet, had we? So
we hadn't. The game did not exist last time.
So I'll let you talk more about Rock Band 4, but really quickly, I also want to talk about Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer. It's really cute. You know, I got it as part of a gift, you know, the bundle that came out. So I don't know if it would be worth a, you know, full retail
the bundle. Price. So do you have a little guy new 3DS?
I do, yes.
Talk about that after you've finished talking about the game.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't know if it's really, you know, worth a full retail price or whatever, but I'm having fun with it, you know, and you do, after a certain point, get to help design other little buildings in the town, and after the first couple of remodels that you do, you get to, you know, also start looking at, like, choosing the plot for your client and designing the outside of their house. I mean, it's definitely cute, you know, having access to all of the different things that, you know, you'd have to usually buy in a regular Animal Crossing, and just being, like, able to design to your heart's content. But, I mean, right now where I'm at, it almost feels, like, too simple. It's like, I want a house. I just designed a house for a little purple cat named Bob, who is definitely family. He's like, I want a house that's filled with flowers. I want to be surrounded by flowers. And so I basically was like, flower wallpaper, garden bed, flowers in the house. And he's like, I love it. So I haven't really found much challenge yet. Either that or I'm just really good at designing interior stuff. But
a good interior designer? Who would have thought?
Well, all those years of watching Trading Spaces on TLC, you know. But in all seriousness, I'm kind of like, I almost want like a kind of like bad mood animal to be like, No, that is not what I envisioned. But, like, so, yeah, I kind of want to see a little more challenge, maybe. But, you know, I don't think that game was designed for that. But it's definitely cute. It's, you know, there's, I guess, not a lot to it, but kind of just, it's a fun little tool. So that's why I guess I say, you know, maybe not worth the full cost, but if you happen to get it, you know, it's cute. It's fun.
Excellent.
And, yes, I do have a new 3DS, a new 3DS, the little guy. I'm kind of bummed that faceplates aren't really accessible right now. You know, you basically, as far as I can tell, have to order them. I kind of was chatting with some of you about that. You can order them from Nintendo and Amazon, but I haven't seen any in stores, so I'm hoping they'll bring more out and, you know, have some more options. So I like it. You know, I've always been a fan of the smaller form factor of the various 3DSs and DSs. But, you know, I also have my XL new 3DS, and I have, like, a bunch of 3DS XLs still. So, you know, I definitely have more 3DSs than one person possibly needs.
Excellent. I mean, you know, that this is kind of the place for it.
What you been playing?
Me, I've been playing a lot of Mario Maker. I continue to, you know, upload stages, working on learning how to design compelling, fun stuff that, you know, teaches people how to play Mario Brothers a little better. That is kind of my goal. A couple people have told me I do it really well. A couple of people have been like, these levels are fucking garbage. And, you know, that's all right, too.
Who said your levels were garbage?
I've been told my levels were garbage. I'm not calling anyone out. That's not what I'm about. But, you know, it's definitely a toss-up for me because it's like, on one hand, my goal, I want to teach people how to use the run button. You can run over gaps of only one block space. Like, if there's a block and then no block and a block, you can run over that without jumping. I try to teach people these things. I use coins as little guides for, like, where you can run and where you should run. Like, I really want to try and, like, make explicit how Nintendo-style design works so that you can then go back to the core games and be like, oh, I finally get this. I see the optimal way to run through this stage without stopping a single time, jumping and bouncing on enemies' heads correctly. That's my goal. It's probably a little stupid, but...
I mean, the thing that's just really interesting for me, and I'm sorry to interrupt, is that it's really interesting. Like, I guess I just took that for granted, and I almost said it really catty. Like, I thought that people, like, just read the manual, but I guess there's, you know, a lot of things where I see where people die. I'm like, oh, you know, I would have expected, you know, people to not die to that or whatever. So
yeah.
I'm just sounding really elitist. You should continue.
So another big one I've been playing a lot of is Rock Band 4.
Yes.
Rock Band 4, you know, I know a lot of people have had some issues with it, including some of our other podcast lovey friends.
Yeah.
For me, you know, I haven't had those problems. I got my Legacy adapter before the game even released, so I was able to go with my old vintage hardware, you know. The digital game ended up unlocking at, like, 9 p.m., so I was playing it, you know, 9 p.m. the night before it came out. I got super into it. The vast majority of my several hundred songs of DLC were available that first night. I downloaded a bunch of them. Obviously, the disc-based exports aren't up yet, which totally sucks. But, you know, I've put probably 15 hours into this game already. I think it's as good as it's ever been, really. I am having a ton of fun. Unfortunately, you know, things aren't as customizable as they've been in previous entries of Rock Band, which I know is a really sore spot for a lot of people. But, you know, the game visually has never looked this good.
Yeah.
I think that all of the gameplay mechanics work as well as they ever have.
I love the voting and stuff and the little RPG paths.
Yeah, so it's all, you know, all of that extra fluff is there, and it's all super cool. But for me, the primary purpose is, like, the core gameplay stuff, and that is all, you know, fresh for the new generation. It feels crisp, it feels right.
Unlike Guitar Hero Live, we should talk about that.
We also played an in-store demo of Guitar Hero Live. Neither of us were very impressed. The note charts were uninspired. The new guitar seems like a gimmick for the sake of a gimmick. I don't have a lot of good things to say about it. And, you know, while I was cautiously optimistic to begin with, I'm now in the firm no. In fact, I just canceled this morning my pre-order for the game, so I will not be buying it after all.
Good job.
And last but certainly not least, I have been playing a shit ton of Destiny. Pretty much every night after work, I come home, sit down, and play an hour of Destiny before I do anything else. I'm doing all of my daily PvP, doing daily heroic story events, doing my, you know, weekly heroic strike runs.
Are you going to your
strike runs?
Too?
So, oh, there isn't, there's no Garrison, you fool. There's not even a Garrison analog. Besides, if Destiny, if WoW played like Destiny, I'd still be subbed to WoW. So, overall, I'm really loving it. My light level is in the 290s now, which means I could theoretically go into the raid, but I have not yet, and I don't know when I will, because that's a terrifying concept. Saiki, do you want to wrap this up, move over to those social links?
Yes, we have some more tweets to read. First off, from Your Enzyme, saying, I love you guys, for real Z's. Aww.
We heart you.
We really do. Lil Daddy's Pizza, who we mentioned not long ago, said, thanks for the wonderful shout-out on the new episode. Super Mario Maker could def be a long-term obsession for me. I sure hope so. O'Krylo said, these are the sodas I was talking about, and then shows us the Super Mario sodas. And then you had said, yeah, I mixed up the Mario with a different one, but I think I called them like Hansen's regarding fruit flavor. And then you shared a fun fact that they were everywhere in your hometown because this town had a Shasta plant.
Yeah, that's literally the town we're in right now.
Yeah.
The Shasta plant's right off 92.
I know where the Shasta plant is. I've driven by it many times. O'Krylo saying, I remember my dad coming home one day with a case, 24 sodas of each flavor for me and my brother. My dad had the hookup because of the catering business. These sodas were rare in my town. What a neat treat. You had shouted out some podcasts for Podcast Day, and Leventine, better known as Todd or Lady Boss from Game Bar and also some other places, said, psst, he forgot GameBuoy.org.
What?
You said, thank you so much. I figured I didn't need to point it out since I name drop it like weekly.
Okay.
So, yes, we had had National Podcast Day or World Podcast Day or Podcast Day. Dirk Sakura had said love to you guys from OLR. Mwah, love you.
Love back to you, girl.
And in regards to our delay from last week, that retro code had said, we understand. And I just got some tweets in because apparently the GameBuoy Twitter had not been following Little Daddy's Pizza. Only,
rude.
Only my own account and your own account.
Rude of you, Slaggy.
So we just got a fresh tweet, fresh out of Little Daddy's Pizza Oven, saying, look who came crawling back. Sorry, how can I make it up to you?
You thirsty bitch.
I did not say anything. I was saying, how can I make it up to you? I will play all your levels. I already do that anyway, so. Anyway, thank you for your feedback. We thrive on it. It is our sustenance. We eat it like we eat Little Daddy's Pizza. And we love your feedback. We love your iTunes.
You know, if that turns out to be a sex thing, I'm going to be horrified.
I was just talking about pizza because we just had pizza for lunch and Little Daddy's Pizza. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. Even when iTunes is not working correctly, if it ever is still giving you issues, please let us know. We are continuing to investigate, you know, why it may have been. So thank you for your patience. We also love to stitch it up on Stitcher Radio. We like
stitch it up.
We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
Yeah, we do. And you can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And of course, all of our social links, all of our complete episode archives and whatsoever, including the Play at Home version, where you can find all the links to the various things we discuss.
Can be found at GameBuoy.org.
Excuse me. Can be found at GameBuoy.org.
Can be found at GameBuoy.org.
Can be found at GameBuoy.org. Spike, why don't you take us to a exit lewd?
Well, as ever and always, I'd like to start off my shout-outs with VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as the recently resurrected, as in super recently, Enos Lives. I'd also, of course, like to point you in the direction of the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show, X Nation, which you can find over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. There is, of course, Slag
Kicks. What about the non-Mighty Mutants?
Well, they suck. They live in sewers and are ruled by the goddess Storm. Of course, there's Slag Kicks, currently off-season side project, Reading is Fundamental, featuring myself, yes, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness, dishing all the dirt and sipping all the tea regarding RuPaul's Drag Race.
I don't want to drink dirty tea.
You should also check out the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, and Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, why don't you take us to Game Bar?
Game Bar is the gay video video game Prairie Home Companion. It is a part of the Hunty Bunch and a fierce, fabulous, fresh fish. What is it? Fierce in love. Is that what Tyra says? Fierce in love. That's our game bar, boys. We've got Koopa Club, also a part of the Hunty Bunch, and an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. The award is from their mothers, and they are moving into a seasonal format that is exciting to me. Also, I'd like to shout out to another member of the Hunty Bunch, which is Joystick Jockeys, featuring two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. And more like LGBTQT, am I right? I'd also like to shout out to La Palanca Podcast, podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español, part of the Hunty Bunch, and inspired from the podcast Cross Zone panel at the First Gamer X. We're very proud to see how far they've come. I also would be remiss
Can't
to not...
see how far we've come?
I'd also be remiss to not mention... Voice of Geeks Network, that's vognetwork.com. It is an online geeky radio central, and you can hear great shows like Orange Lounge Radio, Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, and still one of my favorites, Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And before I continue, we got another just fresh from the oven tweet from Little Daddy's Pizza saying, hair flip plus nail care. Hashtag my milkshake. Well, it does bring all the boys to the yard.
Ooh,
and
saucy.
Also, what brought all of the Dekus into the forest were...
Oh, God. You and your Zelda shit. Jesus.
From Zelda Reorchestrated. Hey, you were just playing the demo of Triforce Heroes.
Oh, I probably should have talked about that during my what I'm playing, too. It was pretty good.
It felt very similar to
a Four Swords, Three Swords adventure. Fun design. I really enjoyed, like, you know, you can use emotes to cheer each other on and give vague advice to your fellow players. I enjoyed it a lot, and it actually, you know, I had a good enough time that it kind of went from, like, on the fence to a will buy. So,
oh, wow.
Definitely did the trick
that
for
you
me.
Actually have an interest in buying? I'm shocked.
Oh, I buy them all. Even though I say I'm never going to, I always give in, just like this.
Being said, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They ended the project quite a while back at this point, but will forever be pouring out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain, which I should call the Great 40 Fountain, I guess.
Ah.
Man, she getting crunk crunk, brush her teeth with a bottle of Jack.
All right, everyone out there in Internet Radio Land. It's about time to wrap this up. Thank you so much for spending this lovely Sunday afternoon with us. We hope you've enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed talking. And I hope you'll be back with us next week to talk about the fairly inauspicious absence this week of a well-known Nintendo game that has a real horror bent. Please follow the guiding light of our flashlights there in the future. But in the meantime, keep gaming.
Mario.
Keep thinking, and, you know, answer that, and stay fashionable.
Black sails in the sunset. All Hallows EP.
Talking about a Bandai Namco. Did it again. Gosh darn.
Oopsie did it again. All right. This week we talked the...